Abundant Gani, everyone. Professor Amin-Ra, Professor Emeritus, California State University, Long Beach. We want to welcome you here to the Conscious Corner, and where we talk nothing but actual facts about Black. And we just want to say that we have a very distinguished presenter this evening, one who's a tireless worker for reparations, an organizer, community organizer, as well as a political scientist. And he likes to be referred to sometimes as a reparationist. We want to give praise and thanks to him for coming on to talk about a historical event, one that America would like to bury because it was so significant, because it was so excellent. And it's a model for people to emulate, where more than a million men, marched to Washington to discuss strategies and solutions to the problems that we face as a people, especially African-American men. Although women did participate, it was focused on the African-American, it's called the Million Man March, and which Minister Faircon called it, and he organized with a diverse group of African conscious leaders. And it was not only a Million Man March, it was a day of absence. Minister Faircon and the organizers called for a day of absence. I mean, if you couldn't make it to the march, don't go to school and don't work. And so many beautiful things came out of it. I'm going to let a professor, Reginald Muhammad, who was a professor and one of the most committed brothers that I know, and that you should also know, because he's widely known in the circles of the community and in the nation for his tireless work in reparations. But not only that, for his scholarly work and for his presentations, often called to speak to young people and speak to people and speak truth to power and speak truth to the people. So without further ado, we're going to turn it over to my friend, brother that just amazes me the way he just get out so much information, brother Muhammad, Reginald Muhammad.
Would it not first be wise for American Blacks to read a few books and do a little thinking for themselves? It is not that I would persuade them to become communists, capitalists, or holy rollers, but whatever decision they reach, for God's sake, let it be a matter of reasoning, not of fear and ignorance in selling their souls to the devil. W.E.B. Du Bois. W.E.B. Du Bois and the World in Africa. Let me start off correctly, Professor Ra. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I bear witness, regardless of land, language, or location, there is but one God, and I further bear witness to all of the prophets. I greet each and every one of you all with the greeting words of peace, Assalamu alaikum, which simply means peace be unto you. And I know I'm speaking to the entire Black family tonight, Professor Ra, on your podcast, The Conscious Corner. And I want to say Abar Ghani.
Yes.
Hotep, shalom, peace, and we say even free to land.
Yeah.
And thank you all so much for having me tonight, Professor Ra. I'm just a student at the end of the day, student working hard to become hopefully a better student, even at my age. And so I want to thank you all for allowing me to be here. First and foremost, too, this is the anniversary birth of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad on October 7th today. And so, and again, you allow me to be on your podcast today to talk about and give a few pointers about the historic Million Man March, the impact that it had on all of America, and especially Black America. And so with that, Professor Roth, Let me just give a little background, some actual facts about the Million Man March to lay the base and lay the foundation for this conversation. And this won't be a lecture tonight. It will be a conversation about reparations, because I want to hear from your guests that are here tonight to pose any questions that you have about the Million Man March. I'm one of those people, Professor Ra, I try and stay in my lane. And my lane, hopefully, is complete reparations. And again, to the history and the impact of the Million Man March. So
before you get started.
Yes, sir.
We also want to say this is the 30th year anniversary of the Million Man March, and they're celebrating the Nation of Islam and other community groups that participated, recognizing this by way of celebration. Excuse me. All over the country. So now,
yes.
Continue, Red.
And again, thank you, Professor Ra. For those who are on for the first time, Professor Ra, I just want to thank you again for the body of work that you have always and consistently have done. I want to thank even around the Million Man March and then the thousands of students that you have touched our lives. And Professor Ra, over the more than 30 years ago, and when I was a graduate student at one point, briefly at the Long Beach State, brother, you allowed students to audit the class. You allowed thousands of students to anytime they were talking and organizing on behalf of our people, you allowed a space and a place for them. And so I just want to always say that I'm grateful and appreciative of that, Professor Ra. Even when I would come on the campus and sell the Final Call newspaper, all the Black Consciousness conferences that you had, again, you just allowed us the space and the place to do that and to really develop and develop our skills as young men and women. And I want to just thank you and appreciate you again for that body work. And I want to thank all of your staff that make sure every week that we have a podcast of this nature. Now, the 30th anniversary of the Million Man March, the 30th anniversary. Remember now, in the winter of 1994, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is on a national tour called Stop the Killing. And so one of those stops was Harlem, New York, at the National Guard Armory, where thousands showed up. And then another 1,000, more than 1,000 were outside that could not get into the National Guard Army. This is in 1994. And at that stop, he called for 1 million Black men to come to Washington, D.C. Now, what was the backdrop during that time? Black men and Black women had been projected all throughout the country, domestically and internationally, as something almost subhuman. The movies were out at that time, Menace to Society. You had Menace to Society. You had there are a number of New Jack City. You had a lot of movies that were out at that time, and even the music was out at that time. That had portrayed Black people and was stereotyping Black people in a very degrading way. And so the minister knew and was inspired to say he would call for a million man march to come and show differently and to make sure that we came back to Washington, D.C. to atone for and take on the responsibility as builders of our community, as educators, as practitioners, as just working people. We were going to come back to our communities and our nation and to build and develop something better. The Million Man March happened on a Monday, October 16, 1995, 30 years ago. October 16, 1995. It happened on a Monday. And remember, too, the Million Man March happens before the explosion of social media. And so that was significant because, and I'm going to get, and you'll see why in my later on in this conversation. Also, too, it happened on a Monday, October 16, 1995. And then, too, there were over 3,000 media people, print, photographers, reporters from all over the world who were assigned to the Million Man March. That's a fact, more than 3,000. And again, it was projected and carried via satellite, via CNN news and others outlets. It was carried all over the world. This is the first time, Professor Ryan, to the audience, that we didn't ask white folks, could we come? We didn't ask them to pay for the march. We didn't ask them to be the consultants of the march, because historically they had done that before. But all over the country, Professor Rob, because you had over 300 local organizing committees, you had an executive committee of a cross-section of leaders, thinkers, and workers who were on that executive committee. Dr. Karinga was on the committee. The Reverend Willie Wilson was on that committee. You had, of course, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. You had Dr. Benjamin Chavis was on that committee. You had Dr. Ife Williams on that committee. You had a host of Dr. Dorothy Height. You had a host of men and women who were on the executive committee. But what comes out of that is at least 300 organizing committees. This is the first time this happens. And so those local organizing committee and regional people throughout the nation and even outside the country organized and helped put on the Million Man March. And according to Howard University, over 87% of those who came that day for the Million Man March, these were non-Muslims. So for the first time, we show a level of unity that had never happened before, because there are Black organizations working on the ground. We had the Republic of New Africa working on the ground. We had the Malcolm X Grassroots Committee. We had African study groups. We had Black churches. We had fraternities and sororities and just Black people working on the ground to make sure it happened. And if you can imagine, Professor Rock, because at the time now, I was not living in Atlanta. I was living in Los Angeles. And if you can imagine getting on a domestic flight, Professor Rock, and to the audience, you get on a flight I get on a flight in Los Angeles. And I had flown, frequently prior to the Million Man March. But never had I got on an airplane, Professor Rock, and nearly 70% of the plane were Black men. And That was just unique in itself. Of course, we can get on the bus and everything and see each other, but to get on a commercial flight in Los Angeles, a major city, a major hub, and 70%, over 70% of the men on the flight are all Black men in a very positive spirit, white America was shook up on October 16, 1995. They were shook up. And so the other things that happened after the Million Man March, according to the Joint Center and Political Economic Studies in Washington, D.C., the only major think tank that we have in the country, they showed that immediately after the march, there were 1.7 million new Black men registered to vote immediately after the march. They show, according to the National Association of Black Social Workers, there were over 10,000 applicants filed to adopt Black children. What we see across the board with Black organizations, whether they be philanthropic, whether they be political, educational, grassroots organization, anywhere from 12% to 35% new membership and enrollment. So these are major things that happen after the Million Man March. And again, like I said, we didn't have whites paying for the march like they had done all the other major marches that Black people had participated in. This was Black people who had paid for the march and made sure that it happened. And for the first time, every dime that was collected at the Million Man March, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan paid for an audit by an independent accounting firm, and they gave a final report of the march. Remember, too, you see the jumbotrons. And again, this is the largest march ever in the history of Washington, D.C. Now, here's another facts about the march, Professor Ron, to the audience. For the first time, unofficially, the Supreme Court shut down that day, the Library of Congress shut down that day, and the House and the Senate shut down that day. And the president at that time, Bill Clinton, was the president, and he leaves town that day. And so there was a controversy about the march, about the numbers. And we say and can prove that there were over nearly 2 million men who showed up on a Monday. The other thing was is that the U.S. Park Service had always done a count of any gathering on the mall. But Professor Ra, and to the audience, all that are on here, Brother Mashendi and others, they stopped doing a count. That crowd size was so large, and it was mobilized by us, a very grassroots way of doing things. And again, at the end of the day, the Park Service stopped doing any counts of the Million Man March, because once they were challenged, because they had underestimated the crowd, they said it may have been over 400,000 people. But when they were challenged and they knew we had the legal team to go to court, and then the Boston University showed too that it was more than a million men with their count, and because they had the technology in place, and they had done other counts of other historic marches. And they showed conclusively that the Million Man March was more than a million. And then two, it was the largest gathering ever in the history of Washington, D.C. It outnumbered any inaugurations. It outnumbered any other demonstrations, peace or otherwise. And so it was a beautiful day that day. And then also since that time, again, they have stopped doing any counts, Professor Ross. Why is it that they stopped doing any official counts of the Million Man March? Because at the end of the day, they really didn't want to show that Black people had the ability and the skill to organize and mobilize. That day, even after the march, Professor Ross, there were nearly 2 million Black men that were there, but there was no fighting that day, Professor Ross. And when we left the mall that day, there was not any paper or trash or any damage done at the Washington, D.C. on the mall that day. So these are some of the historic facts about the Million Man March. And the other thing that we show too, according to the FBI crime statistics in major cities, for the next 10 years, crime went down in major cities throughout the United States. Also too, we show that again too, there's a surge in enrollment of historically Black colleges, because certainly Black college students played a pivotal role in the success of the Million Man March. We'll talk about that later. And then also, Professor Ra, is that at the end of the day, it was a day of, it was known as the Million Man March, Day of Atonement and Day of Absence. There was a mission statement drafted after the Million Man March. There was critics who said, well, nothing happened after the march. And before we get off the broadcast, we'll talk about that conclusively. What are some of the things and the impact of the Million Man March? And lastly, I'll say this. This is a key point here. In my estimation and in my research of the Million Man March is that it brings in a whole new political and economic and political era for America. Think about that. The Million Man March brought in a whole new economic and political era for America. After the Million Man March, which was in 1995, and then by 1996, you have the women's Million Women's March in Philadelphia. And then after that, by 1997, you have the Million Youth March in New York and other major cities, and here even in Atlanta. So the Million Man March has an impact. And remember now, they unleashed all of their forces against the Nation of Islam and Black America, telling them not to even come to the march. The other thing, and Black people still came to the march and they still organized, regardless of what some of the Black leaders who came out against the march, white America, certain aspects of the Jewish community who came out against the march, people still came. Now, think about this, too. It's documented that there were over 10,000 buses that came to that brought Black men into Washington, D.C. And if you multiply, Professor Ra, into the audience, you multiply, if an average bus seats 55 to 62 people, you might multiply that times 10,000. That's more than a half a million that we had just on buses. But what about the trains? What about the planes that brought Black men? They were stunned. They were shook. White America, if you go back and read any of the newspapers, any of the major print, they were stunned. They didn't know what to do because, again, they did not authorize it. They didn't condone the march. They didn't support the march for the most part. They certainly didn't pay for the march. And we didn't ask them to be the consultants on the Million Man March. That's historic in itself. And that shows you, too, again, there had to be a great level of unity. There were Blacks who were nationalists at the march. There were Muslims at the march. There was agnostics at the march. There were Pan-Africanists at the march. There were Christians at the march. There were Hebrews at the march. There were Catholics at the march. There were just Black people at the march. And then, of course, there were Black women who were on the National Planning Committee. And of course, Dr. Benjamin Chavis was the chair of the Million Man March. And it was held at the our official headquarters was in Washington, D.C. at the Phi Beta Sigma headquarters. So I'm saying all that to say that it was one of the greatest shows of unity. It showed that we could come together in unity. And it caused a whole new era to come in. Remember now, after the Million Man March, there are hundreds of books that have at least a page or chapters about the Million Man March. Remember the movie from Spike Lee, Get on the Bus. Remember, Oprah is on national TV, and she's broadcasting that day, the Million Man March. And then also, too, think about all the hip hop community that was there. We know Chuck D, and these were some of the major rappers at that time were there at the Million Man March. We know Chuck D and Public Enemy was there. Tupac was there. We know that Diddy was there. And we know that a host of rappers that were there, even Ice-T, Ice Cube, all of the major rappers at that time were supported the Million Man March. Look at some of the lyrics that came after the Million Man March. Look at the work, one of the last great albums from Curtis Mayfield. He mentions the Million Man March. Let's look at what Death Row Records did and mentioning the Million Man March. Dr. Carlos Morrison at Alabama State University, he has done a piece on the Million Man March and its political impact. Let's look at Dr. Sam Livingston at Morehouse College. He talked about the hip hop community and its impact, and he has a section on the Million Man March in his doctoral dissertation at Temple University. So there's impact of the Million Man March, and it was felt all over the world. It was felt all over the world. It had that kind of an impact on people all over the world. Professor Akinsanya Cambone, I know a longtime resident of LA County, and one of your former colleagues, Professor Ra, he was in Africa at the time. And he told me, and I think he had gone to at least two different countries in Africa. And he said in those two countries around, only thing they kept asking him, they knew he was from America, about the Million Man March. And then after the Million Man March, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan goes on a national and international tour to various countries. Thousands and millions turned out to see him because they understood the impact of the Million Man March. And so there was an official document came out of the Million Man March. So it wasn't just a feel-good session. But go back and read the work of Dr. Maulana Karenga. We know the founder of the US organization in Kwanzaa. He penned the document, the mission statement of the official mission statement of the Million Man March. And in that mission statement, he looks at the political, economic, educational, and the cultural aspects and the goals and the objectives from the Million Man March. Go back and get Cotman's book, The Million Man March, major work. And then two, one of the things that came out of the Million Man March that's significant and key is the Million Family March. We had the Million Family March, millions more movement marches also. And what's key about the Million Man March, what comes out of it is the national agenda, public policy issues, analysis, and programmatic plan of action, 2000 to 2008. Now, that's significant to the audience is because you can't name any issue that we're dealing with domestically or internationally that's not in the 154-page document. And every organization that's doing work today, whether it's social justice work, whether it's dealing with immigration, whether it's dealing with Black farmers, even reparations, is right here in the national agenda. And so we know that there are organizations who are utilizing, even if they don't give you credit for it, but you'll find a chapter and a page or two of the and a framework for what they're doing today, even if it's internationally. And so that's key. But this was published in 2000 and 2008, the national agenda. And so we know that there was great work coming and the documentation that came. Time Magazine, 1995. This is a book. And of course, they featured the Million Man March in the book. And so there's countless pieces that I have even in my library that we have been able to review. And then too, before the end of 2026, we will issue with the help of a number of other people, we will issue an economic and political impact report of 30 years after the Million Man March. And again, we bring in a whole new era. And how do we know we bring in a whole new era? Here's some of the other personnel. A lot of people like to call it after his presidency, after Obama wins two terms and was was a president here in the United States. But President Obama was at the Million Man March. In fact, he was part of the local organizing committee out of Chicago. One of his books, he mentions the Million Man March. He doesn't go into it in depth, but he's there at the Million Man March. There are people who don't know that President Obama is in Chicago. They've seen one picture of him with the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and they went berserk. Well, he had met with the minister a number of times prior to that and had a relationship. So he was there at the Million Man March. But remember, we talked about the three local organizing committee. So the last 25 to 30 years, those organizations, those people who have been inspired like myself and others who have helped shape the Million Man March, who are non-Muslims, have built and developed institutions and organizations inspired by the Million Man March. And then, some of what you hear tonight from me is going to be somewhat biased, of course, because I'm a long-term member of the Nation of Islam. I was part of the local organizing committee in Los Angeles. And then, I was part of the African study group in Los Angeles. So you're going to hear me be somewhat biased about the work of the Million Man March and its impact. But again, it did have that significant impact to the degree that I'm doing reparations work now. But in the mission statement of that Dr. Karinga penned, he talks about reparations in there. And as the minister told me many, many years ago, he said, "Brother Reginald, find your niche and go to work." And so my niche ended up being reparations. But those are just some of the facts that I want to, and then I want to open it up for a discussion, Professor Ryan, any questions about the Million Man March. But again, in 2026, with the help of others, we will issue an official document, impact and economic and political impact study of the Million Man March 30 years afterwards.
Good. This was excellent, brother. Let me make sure I'm this was excellent. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
First of all, we want to thank you for that excellent presentation and all the major points you made about the significant. I'm going to start with Brother Ahi. Brother Ahi, were you around with the Million Man March?
Yes, brother, I was, and helped raise some money, but I did not go because of my beliefs about it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I thought that, and you know, there are a whole lot of things I want to say. First of all, there was only one man that could do that, put that call out, make it happen, and that's the Minister Farrakhan. And the other thing I want to say is how ironic it is with all our Black organizations when they have conferences, including my own fraternity, who he's a member of. We don't hear his voice. He's not invited these days. How ironic is that? And I want to say that I'm thankful for the brother coming on and pulling my coattail to the advantage and how that has enhanced our struggle here in North America. I wish it had been a little bit more economically centered. You know, a million people with $100 donation each one, that's a co-op hotel or something. I mean, no, power is not going to, you're not going to get, a lot of the power that was there, I thought, just lay dormant. Most of the money was spent and given to the white people to get there, to eat, to sleep, and to get home. You know, that was only my that's how I felt about that at that particular time. And I can look back on it and still say, financially, I'm going to listen to the brother. Brother, I'm sure you're going to pull my coattail more about how we as a people gained financially from the experience. All right. Thank you very much, brother, for coming on this evening.
You want to respond?
Yes, sir. Thank you, brother, for your critique and your criticism. And at the end of the day, brother, our job is always about the masses of the people. Individually, sometimes we don't see how certain events are applicable. And the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said, the Million Man March, he planted seeds, and those seeds were Germany at a later place in later time. And if you see how many organizations go back and look at some of the research from the Pew Research and the Brookings Institute and the Joint Center on Political Economic Studies, go back and look at the Congressional Black Caucus, you'll see, brother, the millionaires and the few billionaires that we have developed, which is I call properly the Million Man March era. You'll start to see us start to build and develop and even become even more enlightened and more educated about investing in ourselves. You'll see that we start to organize. One of the things that happens when you start talking about economics, brother, if you're not talking complete reparations, then you ain't talking but nothing but crumbs and confetti. And individually, we may be doing well, but what about the masses of our people? And so there has to be an economic piece that addresses the masses. Now, living in a capitalist society, we often look at how are we doing individually, but the masses of our people are suffering and they're still suffering. And again, go back and look at some of the studies that have been done, and we will be producing an economic impact report. And because that has to be addressed, brother, and we'll be able to show you conclusively it had an economic impact on our organizations and in our community. And we're much wiser for the Million Man March because it forced many of us to go back and study, research, and look at ourselves and say, how can we do this better? And again, how can we do this better? At the end of the day, even after this talk, Professor Rod, I'm going to tell you again, it's complete reparations. And that's the process by which a nation of people are provided with the means to restore their condition, to achieve complete decolonization, to make themselves whole through the ability to self-govern, self-sustain, and self-defend with their own independent landmass, economy, education, culture, and high civilization. There are five key factors when you're talking complete reparations. I'm still on the Million Man March now. Number one is education and culture. Number two is economics and investment. Three is public and mental health. Four is state land acquisition. Five is public policy and legislation. And so, brother, going back and how we tie that in to the Million Man March, brother, the land question has to be addressed. That land question, we could talk about individual economics all day, but how do the masses of the benefit from this? How do we ensure that the masses are sustainable and successful for the remainder of the 21st century? That's complete reparation. And again, it addresses the individual. But the key is it addresses and it is applicable to the masses of our people. And so, again, brother, we'll be able to produce that research for you by 2026. And that will give you and show you conclusively and document how we benefited economically as a people.
Good, good. Brother Ernest, you have a question or a comment?
The thing I didn't get a chance to go about the march on. Kind of, I knew about it in advance because I had several of my friends was in the Black Muslim sect here in Long Beach. You know, Herman Harp and Jimmy Swan, them, Minister yes. Swan, I think they went. So yes, we sir. Got a chance to hear a little bit about it from them, you know.
Is that Mr. McBride, Ernest McBride?
Yes.
Yes, how you doing, sir? I hadn't seen you in many years, but I lived in Long Beach. And and soldiered under Minister Samad, who was at one point Jimmy Swan and of course Brother Goodman. Yeah, those were my big brothers, and they guided me and when in my young, you know, because I came into the nation at in my mid-20s. So those were certainly they had an impact and an influence on me. And and again, I'm grateful. And Professor Rod knows all the people that you name me too, brother.
Right, because
we all kind of were in that circle, and certainly between Compton College and Long Beach State.
I told Professor Rod I kind of missed out because I went to state in 62 and 63.
Yes, sir.
And I dropped out, and then I didn't come back to 78 to 81, you know, and so I kind of missed the Black yes, Student Union when they was rising up, you know, in yes, the mid-60s there.
Okay. Brother Mashinda. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Good evening. Yeah, I don't have any no question. I just comment, you know, again, thanking the brother for coming on and sharing this information. I think it's very critical, very important that, you know, this information gets out, the impact, the influence, you know, and I look forward to more information and look forward to another march. I didn't go to the march. I don't know, at that time I knew I was conscious. I knew what was going on. I just didn't make it, like a lot of brothers didn't make it, but I was there in spirit. And
Yes, sir.
so look, I just appreciate your service, your work, and we'll go from there, but no question right now.
And Professor Rao, let me say this too. That march was the historic march of the Million Man March. It was supported. Millions of black men and women who did not come, they supported with their money. They supported to make sure with the logistics. They were on the local organizing committees, and there were millions of women who participated and made sure that black men got to the march and were supported at the Million Man March. And so we're just grateful for that. And then you had there were a slew of black women that spoke at the Million Man March. They weren't just on the stage, but Dr. Dorothy Height, the National Council of Negro Women, Delta Sigma Theta, she was there. Queen Mother Moore, one of the last public appearances, Queen Mother Moore is there. Dr. Betty Shabazz was there on the rostrum that day. Minister Ava Muhammad was there on the rostrum that day. And of course, the minister's wife, Mother Khadijah, was there on the rostrum. And then, too, of course, Maya Angelou spoke that day at the Million Man March. So we had Dr. Ife Williams, a host of others, brother, who spoke at the march and participated and ensured that we would have a successful march. And of course, there were those who were critical of the march because the minister called for black men. And at the end of the day, the minister, one of the motivations for the minister calling for black men is that because black men, we had not, some of us had not lived up to our responsibility. Remember, there was a pledge at the end of the march, and that pledge was to say, let's take on responsibility. Let's stop making excuses. Let's go back and build our communities. Let's take care of our children. Let's educate ourselves. Let's do what we can to make sure that our people will be successful and sustainable for the remainder of 20th and the 21st century. And again, but go back and read the pledge that was part of the Million Man March. That was historic in itself. And so, again, if you can imagine a sea of people, brother, at the march, myself was there because I came from the West Coast. My brother Gary Shorter was there, coming from Florida. Me and attorney Frank Williams were there. And brother, it was just that day, just going around seeing black men that I didn't know. We just hugged and say, we hugged each other and say, brother, how you doing? Nobody was tripping. I saw, the members from different sets, because they were in Los Angeles. We know that the brothers from the Crips and the Bloods were there. We know the Vice Lords were there. We had brothers, professional people, non-professional, working class, students, Howard University, all the university, all the fraternities and sororities represented that day. Whether the fraternity was Omega Psi Phi, Alpha Phi Alpha, Kappa Alpha Psi, Omega Psi Phi, Iota Phi Theta, they were all there at the march. And one of the things that we got to be able to do too, Professor Rob, because we have been beaten down and beaten back so bad, we don't ever give ourselves the credit for the victories that we have. And so that psychology, we got to get out of that psychology. And the blacks who were against the Million Man March, well, we know that psychology. Dr. Naeem Akbar calls it chains and images of psychological slavery. And one of the terms that we're blessed to coin, it's called caucophobia, the collective fear intimidation of European people. And some of us suffer from a post-plantation pathology that anything that's pro-black, that whites did not validate and give us permission to do, we got a problem with it. Black people, give an example, I was just at Clark Atlanta last week with the graduate students. They asked, what about the reparations movement? Why black people don't support reparations? Generally, black people don't support reparations for two reasons. Reason they didn't support the Million Man March, for two reasons. There was a lack of knowledge about it or a level of ignorance about it, or they're afraid of what the white backlash is and what white folks think about it. And so that's one of the things that we suffer from. Though we suffer from those ills, but we got to be able to give ourselves the victories when we do have the victories. But that Million Man March showed America and the world, how do we organize? How do we mobilize? Because it had not been done before. Remember those 300 local organizing committees, and their local organizing committees still at work today. What came out of the Minuteman March? Give an example right here in Atlanta, Georgia. One of the radio hosts, Derek Bozeman, and former city councilman, there's an organization called Let Us Make Man, the Black Man Lab. All of that was inspired by the Minuteman March. What I do at the here at the National Reparations Institute, that was inspired by the Minuteman March. Look at and remember by 2000, inspired by the Minuteman March, we have the various organizations pop up again on the question of reparation. But they were very clear. Reparations was called out. Dr. Conrad Worrell, who was on the national committee, Dr. Jake Carruthers, Iva Carruthers, all of the great ones. They mentioned and talked about reparation and talk about organizing grassroots. Remember, Dr. Oba Tshaka was there. He's a brother that wrote The Art of Leadership, volumes 1 and 2. He spoke at the Million Man March. Then there were youth at the Million Man March. And so, again, let's give ourselves the credit for the victory for that level of unity that we had never seen before in America.
Good, brother.
That level of functional unity.
Brother Roger P, you have a comment.
It's just excellent information, much needed to come out and be acknowledged. And, you know, hopefully that we still, you know, learn from it and pursue the ideals of it. So excellent information, Brother Reginald. Keep up the great work, and we always support you.
Yes, thank you, sir.
I think that's Dr. Yasigi. Is that her name?
That's Dr. Sharita.
Yes. Dr. Sharita?
Yeah.
Hey, peace and love, family. I'm just now coming in. I just want to say hi to my brother. I haven't seen you in a long time. You still look the same.
How you doing? Good to see you. And I humbly apologize. I didn't get a chance to see you in the body of work that you're doing in Ghana and on the continent. But I know of your work because some of my people in Ghana, when I mentioned you, they knew of you and have connected with you. So we just want to thank you and your family, the Goss family, New Body Product, for your body of work. And her work and Dr. Goss's work is known internationally. Even when I was in Accra, Ghana, back in the latter part of 2023. Good to see you, Doc. And of course, we'll be reaching out to you soon. And thank you and give your whole family the greetings for us.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for the kind words. You know, we're about to celebrate 50 years next year.
Absolutely.
You're part of that.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm still a distributor.
I would see you almost every day at one point in time when I was in Atlanta.
Yeah, and I'm still a distributor and still using the products. And the last time I was in Los Angeles, I stopped by the headquarters there in Compton and loaded up. And so we just are grateful and appreciative of the work. And but any of you all have any questions, any concerns about the Million Man March, you know, the floor is open. Okay. But I just want to, you know, share.
I just want to say, Dr. Sheree, she was on Carl Nelson this morning.
Oh, okay, good.
Back in Black Lives Matter, was talking about the things that we need to do. And she came in and said, what about health?
Yep.
You were listening today.
Yeah.
Good.
It was beautiful, beautiful. Miss Shorter, did you have a comment?
No. Just enjoy the message.
Well, we want to compliment you on your offspring that you
thank you,
Linda and Reggie, for their work that they do, and you keeping the family together and down there in Florida, and the things that you do from a spiritual standpoint of giving them the values and the ethics that that make them a standout in the community and in the nation, because they're always creative and doing things morally and ethically. And I like the way your family stick together. I mean, y'all come together for good events all the time, you know.
I didn't realize my mom was on. I see her name on the screen. How you doing, Mother?
I'm doing well. And thank you, sir, for the kind compliments. It's good to know that we've done something positive in life. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Professor Ra, I just want to, real quick, mother will be 90 years old in on May 29th.
Oh, that's beautiful. Oh,
2026, she'll be 90 years old. Wow. And she's still doing well. And and out of all of her four children, she still got more money than all of us. And so, and still giving us great
money. Probably because I worked hard, or I believed in hard work.
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely. And but she's still giving us good advice and supporting the body of work that we continuously do. And so I'm just grateful and appreciative to have her on and have her listening and have us love and support. Thank you.
Linda?
Any other questions or comments?
Wait, I'm going to get to it. Linda?
Oh, okay, excuse me.
Linda?
Yes, I'm here.
Well, you have any comment or question?
But only, I did not attend the Million Man March, but I did attend the Million Women's March in Philadelphia. Okay. I don't remember the year, but I was definitely there because it was an offshoot of the Million Man March. Mm-hmm. And it inspired me and many other women, especially Black women around the country, to form book clubs. And that's when I was so inspired and motivated, I started a book club. It's still going on today, over 25 years. So that's my inspiration from it.
Yeah, that's good. And I just want to say, a people that can't celebrate itself in victories is lost. The system make you think we're not doing things. It's just like saying that it didn't make no difference because Will Chamberlain made 100 points in one game because they didn't televise it. But it showed Black excellence. The Million Man March was one of the premier gatherings and the Day of Absence. They only counted people that went to the march. There were millions of people that stayed home and had workshops and discussions and That's watched right. the video earlier that day, met that night to go over it. So it's well over me. This is unprecedented mobilization of Black people in the history of this country. The role of the churches, the Christian churches, and this is Minister Farrakhan calling it, but they raised money to send their delegations from their churches. This was a beautiful effort of brotherhood and sisterhood that came together. And not to march on and ask the white man for something, not to protest politics or civil rights, none, but they came together to march on themselves about ethics, moral values, and an agenda when they went back home to participate in. And you had the Crips and the Bloods having one of the major unity meetings right after the Million Man March.
That's right.
Second, when I say come together, and then there's no incident of violence or fighting, drunk, none of that. It was one of the most peaceful gatherings at the and under with that many people that excuse my call that came about. Second, it's a model in a mirror. I think what Garvey said, what we did before we can do it again. And they did do it again.
Yes, sir.
They had a Million Man More March.
Yes,
I was a part of that. I was a part of the first one also. But yes, I was a part of the Day of Absence.
Day of Absence, yes, sir.
Center, and we had hundreds of people there to discuss it. And it was just a beautiful, beautiful thing. If you look at it from that standpoint, from the standpoint of economics, as he was saying, that's been the agenda of the nation all the time, to do for self. And some people were inspired to go up back and start entrepreneurship and businesses. Because the nation's always pushed that. And that's at right. the same time, there was controversy about the money. That's why Minister Farrakhan had an accounting firm come and show. First of all, it costs. It costs because the nation sponsored a lot of people to come, and the speaker system and the security system. It was very expensive. I mean, this wasn't like a concert. You understand? This was a situation. Just getting the restroom things out there, hundreds of them all over, so people could get to the restroom, them little portals or whatever they call them. I mean, it was very expensive, but it inspired people that we achieved something, that we had a goal. It'd be different if you called Million Man March and only 1,000 people show up. But millions came at the beck and call of Minister Faircon and the organizing committees. There was a cross session of Pan-Africanists, nationalists, civil rights, Christians, of all different faith of the Christian denominations, raise money and send young men. I gave my son. I was supposed to be on the roster with my Alana then, but I gave my son my ticket so I could stay home and help organize the day of absence.
That's right.
We need some men to stay home and organize and be the security and work with the women groups that were doing it. Haki Mahadi Bhuti, the Institute of Positive Education, was the co-author of the mission statement.
That's right.
Woodrow Wilson is one of the premier ministers in Washington, D.C.
That's right.
Oh, this brother church is I visited it. Oh, man, he got nothing but beautiful things. And he's well respected and honored. Second, there's a model in a mirror. Well, Garvey said what we've done before we get again.
But again.
It gave us a chance to look at ourselves. Yep. You know, and you didn't see black people just laying out drinking and just like it was a picnic or something and doing that. They were paying attention to every word that each speaker spoke. I mean, yeah, there was some black people that didn't think it was going to go over. You know? I mean, they didn't think it. But then they ended up coming once the masses started coming and once the movement started. The same people that was criticizing, you're going to get it ready, don't worry. They came and they were there.
That's right.
You see? And then the third thing, that's a mirror. You know, like Jet Reggie said, could you imagine having over 200 organizing groups throughout the country? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, to get people to come, man, that's work. That is work, man, you know. And then at the same time, it was about developing a document, mission statement.
That's right.
That covers economics, education. They said, when you leave, these are the things we want you to do. Get the mission statement. It was an agenda of activities and things of this nature. And it encouraged black men to marry. It encouraged them to go home and be fathers. It encouraged them to be political conscious and active. It encouraged them. Yeah, the man gonna come back and dilute the community with drugs and alcohol and change the agenda from I'm black and I'm proud to records of that demeans us, as James Brown said a week before he died, while he was sick, he said, he called Al Sharpton and he said, man, what happened? He said, when I was back in the city, I was saying, I'm black and I'm proud. And today, we got people celebrating, dancing to music that some of them
degrade.
That degrades them. And, that's the power of counterintelligence, to counter your intelligence. See, it's very difficult for us to understand the wickedness of this society. They try to win the minds of our people, not only with drugs, as Dr. Sherita would say, but with additives and Stop. Most people get more high on what they eat than they do on drugs, you know, and it causes long time illness. But that's another point. Each other and have respect for each other. So they send out Asian provocateurs and put media and promote Lil Wayne and all the rapper groups that's talking sex and bad Luke and all of that, make them millionaires and give them radio time, TV time, but they would not give Dr. Sherita about health that kind of time.
That's right.
Saying, well, I interviewed, but then let me finish this. So there was policy. And as Reggie said, they had a plan. Minister Farrakhan read the pledge. And it was just a beautiful thing to pledge to be a we pray for them, but those that did get something out of it, that changed their minds, changed their lives, changed their vision of themselves. That was a beautiful thing. And then at the same time, it dealt with so many beautiful things that I remember. And then they called for the, it created a change throughout the community. And it inspired us to continue to struggle. And our biggest struggle is with ourselves and our own contradiction. And made people realize that you have to quit hurting your own people and things of this nature. And for a little while, as Reggie said, it happened. And this is a historical event. And we're not gonna take nothing from it. I mean, yeah, there's some problems, issues behind the scene, but hey, that's not it. The most important thing. It's just like Barack Obama winning the presidency. He didn't do that much for black people. He's a Democratic president. But what he did do was inspire people to vote, inspire people to give, have hope. It's just like going to church. And people be saying, well, you know, but people believe that there's a heaven. And that makes them feel good that they'll see their ancestors if they go by the biblical script. All the three major religions talk about paradise or heaven that you are ascend to. And it makes people act right and give them morals and values. And these churches and religious institutions were many of the life-saving things that brought us this far. But that was the only organizations we had after the Holocaust of enslavement that they allowed us to have. And we used it for the struggle. Almost all your rebellionists were religious. You know, I mean, that turned to say, God told me to do this. Harriet Tubman was a minister. You understand? Frederick Douglass minister. All of them did these things. And so it was a beautiful thing, but I'm going to let Reggie go ahead on it. Make some more comments, and if anybody has any closing comments, go ahead. But I just love, like I said, I was a part of the second Million Man March.
That's right.
Many more. I was at the Dorothy Height Center in Washington, D.C. I was specifically invited by Minister Farrakhan. Me and Marlana wrote together there, and his wife, and we came right back. But we organized with Johnny Bakewell, the minister from the nation. He's in L.A. now. But anyway.
Minister, used to be Brother Minister Tony.
Yeah, Tony was there. And,
Minister Malik now, yes, sir.
As a matter of fact, when Minister Farrakhan came out, he recognized me. Because like that, he was one of the first people that reached out when they put them trumped up charges on me. Him and Marlana. And they knew they were fake charges just to get me out of the institutions. And most people still believe it. But anyway, go ahead, Reggie. Go ahead.
No, thank you. Thank you Professor Ra for bringing even more context to this discussion tonight and giving another perspective of it, because that day of absence was key and critical, Doc. Because one of the things that we know too, Professor Ra, after the Million Man March, the minister talks about how certain doors that were open for him before all of a sudden became closed. Remember, the minister is banned from the colleges and universities after the Million Man March. And there were some who were saying that he should never be allowed to have that kind of power. Because remember now, if you have at least nearly 2 million show up on a Monday, and the U.S. standing army is only, what, over 2.5 million, they were frightened by it, Doc. And again, go back and look at some of the books that have been written after the Million Man March. Go back and read the book called The Farrakhan Factor by Amy Alexander, and their critique and the fear that it struck in Europeans and whites. Internationally, it has an effect on the Million Man March. If you look at after the Million Man March, leaders from, especially from Africa, called the minister, brother, within days, because they saw the march and they were overwhelmed by the level of unity, the success of the Million Man March. Winnie Mandela called the minister. Well, how is that relevant today? The young brother in South Africa today, Julius Malema, Winnie Mandela talked about how her and her family and the organization used to feed off of the tapes and the lectures from Black leaders, and especially the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. So let's look at the work of Julius Malema today. Let's look at PLO Lumumba on the continent of Africa. Let's look at Ibrahim Traoré and Burkina Faso today. They were all young people, and they were inspired. They'll tell you about the Million Man March. Like I said, in latter part of 2023, when I was in Ghana and got a chance to meet the president of Ghana and his director of protocol, he mentions that in 1995, he said, brother, we were always inspired in that Million Man March. Now I'm in Ghana, and he's talking about the Million Man March. So people were inspired all over the world to organize, young people, organize and mobilize like never before. And again, if we go back and look, and we'll have it documented in the impact, the economic and political impact report of the Million Man March, that again, anywhere from 12% to 35% in new membership in organizations. And remember, this is the largest audience, public audience, for any of the leaders that you see current today. That was the largest audience for Reverend Al Sharpton. That was the largest audience for Reverend Jesse Jackson. That was the largest audience for a public audience, I'm talking about, for Maya Angelou and all the other ones. Yende Baptiste, who spoke as one of the youth at the march. This is the largest public audience. And again, it sets a new model and a new precedence for organizing and mobilizing that America had never seen before, and they were shook. And again, think about the Congress. It's not a holiday for them, but they were so frightened of Professor Ra, and then they thought there would be violence that day. Because according to Minister Abdul Sharif Muhammad, who was the Supreme Captain of the Nation of Islam, he meets prior to the Million Man March, he meets with heads of the FBI, CIA, the DC police, and all of them, because they were worried that something would happen that day. And they had National Guard there underground waiting. If something had happened that day, they were ready to come in with their heavy hand and do and arrest and get that situation under control. And we know when it comes to Black people how they normally overreact. But again, the FBI, CIA, DC police, and a number of other agencies were all set in a meeting with Minister Abdul Sharif about the Million Man March, because their concern was this many Black men, and we knew the statistics at that time and how we had been projected all over the world, and they were worried about what would happen that day. But again, a sea of peace of Black men, that was unheard of. And again, it was just a positive vibe and a positive spirit for those who had come. and white America. At the time, Professor Rob, when I talked to my father, he was when I talked to him later that night, he told me he was proud that me and my brother had gone to the Million Man March. Now, he was teaching at St. Petersburg College at the time, and, you know, majority white students. And he said in his classes, and he's teaching American government, state and local government, and constitutional law there. And he said that only thing they, he said he could not get any classwork done that day because they were so consumed. Everybody on the campus, and this is a predominantly white campus now. There are some blacks there, but they were so consumed about the Million Man March because it's on all the national networks. They're stunned, Professor Rob, because they have come against the march. They don't support it. They asked black men not to come. They were threatened. Some people said that they had threatened that if you get on the buses, they would stop you before you came in. And of course, I was coming in from L.A. There were people who were saying, man, y'all ain't finna have no million people, you know, and the word niggas gonna start something, man, something's gonna happen. Y'all ain't gonna have no million people. Somebody gonna make something happen. Y'all wasting your time. We heard all of that negativity about the Million Man March. And again, we had the belief that, you know what, in unity, with some prayer and unity and work, we can make this happen. And it was a victory.
That's good, brother. First of all, we want to thank you, brother. The grains of sand on the ocean are few compared to the many thanks we grant to you for your presentation. As I said, they're celebrating it, those that know the significance of it, and those that want to teach others the significance of it. Because if we've done it that time, we can do it again. And we may can focus on other issues.
That's right.
But at the same time, it was an inspiration for people to go out and be entrepreneurs and to start travel to Africa and open up business and various things. I know a couple of students that went to the Million Man March and they ended up developing businesses across the sea, across in Africa. And I'll give you their names and everything. But right now, anybody else have a burning question before we sign off? All right, Brother Rashidi, tomorrow?
Yes, I'm about to show it. There it is. We got our guest tomorrow is Pastor and Special Agent Calvin Kressel, and we're doing one of our series called Born and Raised in Compton. So that will be tomorrow.
Okay. Brother Reggie, do you have a closing comment?
Yes, Professor Ra, I just want to thank you all for allowing me to be on, and thank you all for allowing me just to have a conversation. And I know I kind of bounced around, but if you have any specific questions that you'd like to ask me, please call me or email me. We need your help. We need your expertise. Those of y'all who are interested in working on this economic and political impact study, it'll be a political report of the 30 years after the Million Man March. And so any of you all are interested in, we need your expertise. We need your insight. If you have research skills, we need it. And because we want to document, we want to be able to document, not just talk and not just be a bunch of rhetoric and we wasting time, but we want to be able to document what we have said and show conclusively the impact of the Million Man March. Because again, I like to say this again, the era that we're in even today is the Million Man March era. We have to give ourselves credit for it and we have to take hold of it because the enemy will certainly not do it. And then too, one of the major statements that Minister Farrakhan makes at the Million Man March, many of us remember the march on Washington in 63 when Dr. King, his famous speech, I Have a Dream. But what many of don't remember about the Million Man March, I ask that you go back and watch at least some of the scholars and workers who presented at the Million Man March. But one of the things that Minister Farrakhan said, he said that one of the statements that he made that was profound and it's even more applicable today, that white supremacy must die in order for humanity to live. Think about that. The mindset of white supremacy must die in order for humanity to live. If we see what's happening with the MAGA movement, look at Trump, look at others and what they're doing, and you see what's happening with some of the European nations, how they're reacting to Burkina Faso, Niger, and Mali, and even South Africa, how they're responding, because they can't just come in and do what they've done before, taking from them. New forms of neocolonialism, not working on our people like it was 40, 50 years ago. So at the end of the day, again, the impact of the Million Man March. And so let's not forget that, the impact that it had. It's a whole new model, whole new era, whole new modern methodology. How do you organize and mobilize? This was the Million Man March. Long before social media, we were organizing to that degree. And so I please contact me. We need your support to continue to do the work. And remember, visit our website, nationalreparationsinstitute.org. We need your support. We need your financial support for the body of work that we're doing. And again, we don't have any government backing. The money and the support come from the people and come from my family. And so at the end of the day, we need your support. And because victory is assured if we stay together and we organize. And remember, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said 95% of our problem could be solved just with our unity. 95% of our problem could be solved just with our unity. So let me leave with this. For the remainder of the 21st century, we must produce thousands of great thinkers who are great builders, and thousands of great builders who are also great thinkers. Then and only then are we prepared to take our original position on top and at the center of the world stage as a proud, productive, proficient, and powerful people. This level of restoration and transformation will only happen with complete reparations. Thank you all so much for your time. Thank you for your attention, and look forward to talking with and organizing with many of y'all again. And again, complete reparations. Thank you.
Appreciate you, brother. Appreciate you. So we're going to say Conscious Corner, and each one teach one. Everybody continue to have a great day.